Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Spech.
Hello.
How's it going, Derek?
Going fantastic.
Fantastic, you say.
Yes.
It's been a nice week.
It has. I spent much of it in New Brunswick, visiting family.
Catching up?
Yes, catching up, gathering. Yeah, it was awesome. New Brunswick is a long way. First time I flew, so that was nice.
Yeah, because you drive out there.
Yes, yes.
But it was just a quick visit.
I still want to do the math, though. I want to see about, so I flew and rented a car.
Mm-hmm.
Now I want to know what it would have cost me if I had driven.
It would have cost you a bit more time, but less money.
Yeah, probably.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. It was nice. It was relaxing to go by plane. And I geeked out, did all kinds of, I've got a trip computer thing for road trips on my motorcycle.
Mm-hmm.
So like the 0 to 60, 0 to 100 on the plane, I was doing all that plus the altitude, plus taking screenshots and whatever of passing over my house. And
nerd.
That was nerd.
Did you guys leave from Pearson?
No. No, that was, we specifically wanted to do Porter. We
could Porter, that's right.
Island Airport. So we'd be able to take the GO train into Toronto and then, and then walk over to the island. And
do the underground tunnel to the island.
Yeah. Have you ever been through there?
No, but I've dropped people off there.
It's a hoot. So there's two long treadmill, like, conveyor belt things.
Yep.
You walk so fast when you walk on one of those.
Yeah,
you
just don't fly off the far end, right?
Oh, yeah. When you get to the end, it's like, whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a hoot. It's you see, you're just leaving people in the dust or just walking like normal people. It's like, you're so slow.
What a normie. What was the weather like?
It was really good. It was, the weather was like, it's typical St. John, New Brunswick type thing. So Saturday morning, it was fogged in because, you know, Bay of Fundy caused a lot of fog. But it only rained the whole time, was on Saturday evening between 4 and 6 or something. It rained.
Yeah.
And then the sun came back out. So we were expecting a lot of rain from Friday through Sunday, but, you know, rain's unpredictable, or weather's unpredictable.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you can keep a job like that as a weather forecaster and get it wrong so often. And
because you're one of the most hated
people
in the world.
They still pay you.
Yeah.
I know.
Yep. That was nice here. Got a little, well, I really didn't get much done on Saturday. I inherited some plumbing issues.
I saw you ranting. I was like, uh-oh, I should
ask
a
lot of F-bombs.
Is this the same one that's under the kitchen sink?
Yep.
You're still trying to fix that. You got to replace all the piping.
No, this is a second half because I had to put in new piping and stuff beforehand. Yeah. But the part that has the shutoff valve that goes to the faucet outside on the side of the house, that was still good. But when I went to turn it on this year, I guess it had corroded enough that it wasn't turning on properly, and then it started leaking up from the cartridge thing.
Yeah.
So I had to replace it. So, did some pipe unsoldering, took off the parts, took it outside, got new pieces, the whole meal deal, made the exact same thing, and then re-soldered everything back together. But there is one piece, and it's got this pinhole dribble.
Oh.
And I must have tried to fix that at least a dozen times.
New pipe and with the pinhole?
Yep. And it just kept doing it. And I was like, it's like, go back to the start. And at that point, I'm just like, you know what? I'm ready just to like torch it and be done with it.
Yeah.
Just burn the house down. I don't need to deal with it. It was so frustrating.
Yeah.
Like what should have taken an hour job took like 4 hours.
Okay.
I got nothing else done that I needed to get done.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, I'm just like, you know, I'm not doing anything else now. I'm just so ticked off. And then the next day, I had a second one to do on the other. This one of our electric, like the plug on the back deck, it blew.
Yeah.
Both of our outside faucets for the gardening, one for the front, one for the back, both of them went. Plus the shutoff valve under the sink went.
Yeah.
It's like, why all this year? Like, what's going on?
Yeah.
So the other one, and I know the trick to do this one, but the shutoff valve for the one in our garage is actually in our basement here, and they've encased it to hide it.
Mm-hmm.
You need a baby hand in order to get in there fully. Yeah? My hands do not fully fit in that little. And it's like, you know what? I'm ready just to rip all this apart.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can turn there, but it. I'm thinking the little gasket in there is in that cartridge is probably seen better days. Because when you go outside, you open up the garage faucet, and there's still a little bit of water coming out.
Oh.
So I'm just like, you know what? I know how to fix it. I am not in the mood to deal with this crap today. So I turned it off, put all my stuff away, closed the garage door, went in the back, went downstairs, turned off the electric, went outside, took out the outlet on the deck, put the new one in. Like, 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It's like, why can't the plumbing be like the electrical? I didn't even get a shock. I didn't die. Nothing. But, you know. Put the tester in, it all worked fine. So what you do if you have to solder something and you can't get, there's still a little bit of water, which will cool what you're trying to solder, right?
Mm-hmm.
You put a piece of bread a little bit farther up.
Yeah.
And then you heat everything up, you do your soldering, and by that time the bread has turned to really crumbly toast.
Yeah.
And when you turn the water on, it just blows the breadcrumbs out.
Yeah.
That's how I did the first one under the sink, but I wasn't in the mood to deal with that on Sunday morning. So I picked up dog poop. I mowed the lawn. I did some of the garden. Bunch of the weeds were doing a whole bunch of stuff at the side of the house. Got half of that done. Did the electrical outlet. I smoked some chicken on the smoker.
Yeah.
Dishwasher, laundry, cat stuff, dog stuff. It was such a great day to get stuff
except
done.
Except for the plumbing.
All I know is that Saturday afternoon, I said, because it was like, you know what? I could go out in the morning and I can go canoeing for like 5 hours.
Yeah.
Get some stuff, you know, go for a paddle. Nope. I got stuff that needs to get done. I'm going to get it done. Because I know tomorrow is going to be raining. Yeah. And it didn't rain tomorrow. So I said, you know, I'm going to be responsible homeowner. I'm not going to go paddling. So at the end of the day, after the whole plumbing thing, I gave up my canoeing for this crap. Oh, my God. I was ready just to throw a hand grenade into the house and walk away. Oh, so frustrating. It's like, why?
Yeah.
And then Sunday was a good day. It was a nice day outside.
Did you go paddling?
No, I got a whole bunch of stuff around here done. Mm-hmm. A whole 2 days worth of stuff done, except for plumbing.
Yeah.
Because you know what? Screw plumbing.
It can be frustrating.
Oh, well, and the fact is, the part that there's this little elbow that comes out.
Yeah.
And where the elbow joins, like the pipe. Mm-hmm. Comes into that elbow, that copper elbow, is about 2 inches from the wall.
Yeah.
So you're trying to maneuver under a sink in that little spot and try not to set the wall on fire.
Exactly.
I've got something there to block it so I don't set the wall on fire, but what a pain in the ass. That's all I'm saying. If I ever became a plumber back in the day, I'd probably be dead by now. You know why? Because I would want to be.
This job's going to kill me.
So that's going to be a problem for another day. Let's talk about some good stuff.
Yes.
So a daring descent of Rio...
Elsa Seca
became even more risky when paddlers noticed a black dog shivering on a rock shelf.
What country is this?
Well, you'll find out. Above one of the gnarliest waterfalls in the planet. Paul Palmer was at the lip of the 60-foot Tamada 1 waterfall on his first day kayaking in Veracruz, Mexico.
Got it.
His crew of expert kayakers was planning to paddle some less daunting but still demanding drops downstream when one of them spotted something moving in a pool below. We were at the lip and someone says, "There's a dog down there," said Palmer, a professional kayaker from Colorado Springs. He's won the national freestyle kayaking title in 2017. That's who he is. Black Pup was perched on a mossy rock shelf on the side of a pool that spilled into Tamada 2. narrow rocky cascade that plummets 90 feet.
Oh.
And is renowned by top paddlers as one of the gnarliest waterfalls on the planet. So somehow he's stuck between 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
So down 60 feet, and then he would have to go down another 90. If the dog was swept into Tamada 2, it was going to die for sure, Palmer says. So the group, including paddlers Beckham Bayreuther, Gav Barker, David Mitchell, and Sophia Reynoso, changed their plans. They would run Tamada 1, rescue the hound, navigate a consequential small waterfall to the very lip of Tamada 2, and climb out with the dog. The group had ropes to rappel over the falls to reach a series of cascades in the inner gorge of the Rio Alça Seca below Tamada 2. I said, we have all the gear. Let's go get this dog out and we can do a different mission. A dog rescue mission, said Palmer, who grew up with dogs. There was no way that dog was going to survive a night in that cold gorge and no way it would survive those downstream drops. Palmer rappelled into the pool, watched as his partners paddled over the 60-foot Tamada 1, and then the real work began. Only way the dog entered the gorge was over the 60-foot Tamada 1 drop, so she was rattled. Palmer spent about 30 minutes talking sweetly to the trembling, waterlogged pup. She eventually approached him. He held her for about another 30 minutes. She realized, yeah, you're my lifeline here. This was a big concern. Once we got down there, we were just hoping it wasn't feral, pissed, bitey, mean dog.
Bitey, mean dog.
Don't be bitey. Portaging Tamada 2 is a sketchy endeavor. First, paddlers need to drop a 7-foot waterfall, take out in the tiny swirling eddy above the lip of the rarely run 90-foot Tamada 2 drop. Then they have to use ropes to scale wet rock to get to a safer place to rappel with their boats into a lower gorge. Doing that with the dog amplified the sketch factor.
Yeah, how do you safely hold a dog while you rappel?
Well, first you got to go up a bit, then you got to go down. Palmer loaded the dog onto his spray skirt, essentially on his lap, wrapped his quick-release safety cord around her neck like a leash, and he paddled over the 7-footer. Dog stayed aboard over the drop. Palmer paddled to the shore, and they set up safety ropes and began scaling the drenched cliff. We would climb 6 feet and hand the dog up to the next person, and they would climb 6 feet and hand the dog up. If we fell, we were running Tamada 2 without a boat. It was a pretty stout little extract. Up top, the landowner and his workers watched the whole process. They had never seen the dog before, so the rescuers brought the pup to Adventure Wreck Hostel, a headquarters for kayakers exploring the rivers of Veracruz. She walked in there like, this is my hostel, these are my people. Everyone there loves her, she loves it, now she's the dog that ran Tamada 1.
Right on.
Palmer says the pup already is motivating kayakers who ponder the classic Tamada 1.
If a dog can do
waterfall, it. Says everyone can say, come on, don't worry about it, a dog ran it. Oh yeah, the name of the adopted waterfall running pup,
Tamada. Makes sense.
Yep. So that's a nice story, you know, like.
Cool.
But it makes you wonder, how did the dog get there?
Yeah, where it come from? Yeah.
Just like a stray dog.
How did it show up in this pool?
Zipped up farther up, fell in the river farther up or something.
Yeah. And very cool. That's a memorable event. They're probably going to remember that more than they would have if they ever just ran it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They remember rescuing the dog.
I mean, they did the first part that they were going to, and they were going to probably go around the second part anyway. Mm-hmm. So
very cool.
They just had to pick somebody up with them.
Yeah.
Take them with them. Yeah, that's pretty cool. I came across this next article because it's sort of what we all say why we go out there. Paddling into the wild, why I'm taking a mental health journey.
Hmm.
There's a lot of people doing that these days.
Yeah.
So you know what? I need to get out there. I need to decompress.
I need to get away.
It's all about the mental health. I need to unplug. Columnist, district counselor, filmmaker, and adventure guide Ken Matheson is setting off on a self-discovery kayaking trip along BC's west coast. There's a saying I've come to know well. You can't pour from an empty cup.
Oh.
I used to nod along when I heard it. Lately, I've come to realize how true and urgent those words really are. I think we all get in that mood where we're sitting there at the end of the day going, I got nothing left. I go to work some days like that and just like, yeah. And that's usually when Tracy goes, you need to go for like a couple of days overnight somewhere. Serving as a municipal councillor is a privilege. It's also demanding in ways most people don't see. You try to represent the community fairly, listen to every concern, weigh every decision carefully, but no matter what you do, someone is always unhappy, and it wears on you. Not because of the criticism that comes with the job, but because you care, because you want to do right by everyone, and when you can't, it can feel like a personal failure. I've been feeling the weight more and more lately. Sleepless nights, sense of running on empty, constant mental juggling of competing needs and pressures, all while trying to stay grounded. Somewhere along the way, I lost track of my own well-being. And you can do that. It's so easy to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You get so involved into everything else going on in your life that you sit down one day and just realize, yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm doing something bold, something personal. On June 25th, I'll set out on a solo sea kayaking journey, 500 kilometers along the rugged and remote Great Bear Rainforest on Canada's west coast. I'll be paddling alone for 3 weeks in the wild Pacific Ocean, immersed in silence, surrounded by ocean, the forest, the raw wildness of nature. It's a physical challenge, yes, but more than that, it's a chance to reset, to reflect, and to find my footing again.
Cool. That's, it's, I can see where that could re-energize you. Mm-hmm. I do like getting out.
Yeah, you know what? Like, there, I'm solo at, trips, at work
away
right
from
now.
People, yeah.
There's days where I'm coming home going, like, you know what? I just, and I actually said it to Trace yesterday, there's one person there. I don't want to hear their voice anymore. Yeah. I am tired of hearing that yap.
Absolutely.
Open. And it's just like, I really, and I think this is why this one, I clued in on this one here, is because, dude, I feel you. Like, I just, yeah. I'm calling it the journey with the bear. And the bear isn't just a creature out there in the woods. It's a symbol of the inner work I need to do. The fears, the doubts, the fatigue I've been carrying. We all have our own bears to face. Mine have been roaring louder lately, and I need the quiet to hear what they're really trying to tell me. I don't expect to come back with all the answers, but I do hope to return changed, recharged, more present, more clear-eyed, and more able to serve this community with the energy and compassion it deserves. This isn't just a personal journey, it's also a reminder to all of us in leadership, caregiving, and community service, if we want to support others, we have to care for ourselves. That's not weakness, that's wisdom. So if you see me gone for a few weeks, know that I'm not checking out, I'm checking in with myself, with nature, and the deeper reasons I do this work. Thanks for understanding, and when I return, I look forward to reconnecting with a renewed spirit and a full cup. Ken Matheson, Municipal Councillor, Clearwater, BC, and soon to be paddler into the wild.
Good for him.
That's a pretty cool letter to write.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like I said, I came across that. I was reading it. I said, what's that? Another trip? Somebody's doing another trip? And then I started reading, and I'm like, oh, dude. Like,
mm-hmm.
I wish, yeah. And it's just, you get to that point in life where you're just,
yeah.
Everything is, you know, you're going 15 different directions and everybody wants this little bit and little bit. And there's all these little things just gnawing at you.
Like plumbing
and, and electrics and planning trips and all that sort of stuff. And at some point you just sit back and realize that, you know, you're getting grumpy at people and you're not concentrating as much as you were and
distracted.
And like I say, there's one guy, I don't want to hear his yap open again. I'm just like had enough of, you know, and you get to those points where you're like, okay, you know what? I need to go out and do some paddling or get away at some point.
Yeah.
And I mean, yeah, and when you're trying to be a municipal councillor and you got to deal with all these people and all these different, you know, everybody's right and everybody's opinion is the only one that should matter, and it's got to wear on you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you look at some of these councillors and you're thinking, these politicians, that thinking like, I would not want to be you. Not for $1 million. Not even 2 million. Or 3, 4, 5, we might be getting there, but
yeah.
So Ken Matheson, municipal councillor in Clearwater, BC. I hope things work out for you, yeah. And hope you have a great trip, buddy.
Yeah, I'm curious. I want to follow this guy now. It's
well, that's stalking. Yeah. And if he turns around, he'll see you.
No, you know what I mean. I'd like to hear
who's this guy behind me.
I'd like to hear about his journey.
Hi, I'm Derek. I'll be your stalker on this trip.
Because it's more than just a physical journey. He's going on a mental and metaphysical journey, right?
Yeah.
So I'd like to see how that goes.
Yeah. Just send him an email.
Yeah.
Say, hey, buddy. Hey, pal. Hey, friend.
Yeah.
Let us know how it goes.
It'd be interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. To see the change in mental state before and after and so on.
Here's your before picture and your after picture.
Yeah. Yeah.
Coming to this side of the continent.
Mm-hmm.
Trey Reeves. Have you ever heard of that name before?
I never have. You're asking, mm-hmm. Should I have heard of him?
Yes.
Why?
I'm not going to tell you.
Okay.
He's hoping to set a record and paddle the entire 652-mile stretch of the Tennessee River in just 7 days' time. 652 miles. In 7 days.
Hmm. That's a lot of distance.
That is. It definitely is a lot. I'm not going to sit here and be like, oh, 652 miles? No problem, Reeves says. Said he plans to sleep for 4 hours every day, 8 till 12.
Oh.
8 in the morning till noon. So then he's going to paddle from noon till 8 the following morning. Whenever he stops, he said it will only be for 10 to 15 minutes, and then going right back into the water to avoid getting sore. Reeves said maintaining pace is the key to completing the journey. I'm going to do 120 miles, get down below Watts Bar Dam, I'm not sure where that is, then it's 100 miles a day after that, every day until we get done. Reeves is no stranger to long trips in his kayak. He's completed a 1,000-mile race through the Yukon, as well as multiple races at 600 miles in his home state of Alabama. Reeves said being out on the water and doing the work is the easiest part of his whole journey.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's easy once you get out there and you have your plans in place, right? Everything's about a lot easier once you get there.
It's the planning.
It's the planning, it's the logistics. And, yeah.
Yeah.
Getting people to buy into your dumb plan. I only see that because I've been there, done that. Every part that's not just being out on the water, the stopping, the sleeping, all that's difficult. The being out on the water is the most peaceful thing. I mean, I love the water, so being out there paddling is not difficult at all. Reeves said, while the paddling is his favorite part, a lot of work needs to be done before he can get on the water. It's the logistics of everything that happens beforehand. This is a difficult part. I've been working on this for months, just trying to get the right track, get the right stops, everything lined out, down through the river so that we're not having to make changes on the fly. Now, when John Van Berger did the...
Yukon?
The Erie. The canal system there.
Yeah.
That's one of the things I was. This reminds me of is he had that trip from start to end,
mm-hmm.
but the places to stop,
yes,
were not all that easy to find. So getting the logistics beforehand to say, hey, okay, you know what? I definitely know I can stop here.
Stop
A, and I stop definitely B, know stop I can C. stop yeah. here. Yeah. Where, you know, John was, I think it was, and I would have been along with John as well, going like, yeah, there's this place and this place and this place. And then finding out, oh, you can't go here and you can't go
there.
Oh,
yeah.
And you got to do the stealth camping and you got to do the this and then that. And that, yeah. If you didn't know that beforehand, that makes trips so much more difficult.
Yes.
You know, that, you, oh, yeah, okay, we're going to make it there on the end of today and we'll be there just before dark. And then you get there and they go, you can't stay here.
Yeah, exactly.
Then what do you do?
That's right? Stressful. That's on the fly trying to plan stuff.
Right. And that's what he's saying. He's trying to arrange stuff beforehand so they're not having any of that last minute surprises or having to make changes on the fly. Having said that, there are things that come into effect that you just have no control over.
Yeah, exactly.
Reeves said that this 652-mile stretch is something he has had his eyes on. He was ready to do it without any recognition and said the only thing he cares about is inspiring his kids. The main thing I care about is my kids thinking, oh, wow, my dad's doing something real hard, and realizing that you don't have to be anybody special to do hard stuff. It takes work. A lot of training goes into it. A lot of thought and preparation goes into all of it. And we've been talking, we had a couple of talks about all these expeditions. Tis the season for expeditions, and everything's an expedition nowadays. And, oh, this is going to be the hardest thing in the world. And, you know, you're looking at all these big name people that are doing it. And now you're finding all these people that are, they're not big names. They're just regular old people doing these big, long trips.
And the reason we hear about it is because of social media.
Yeah.
It's probably also what introduces the idea of doing this is people are seeing more and more of these things happening and these things going on.
And then you don't have to be a big name explorer or adventurer. No. I don't even know if we use the word explorer anymore because what's not been explored.
Yeah.
You know, adventurers and all that. You don't have to have a big name to do this stuff anymore.
Yep.
There's so much information you can get off the internet and books and maps and all the gears and all that sort of stuff you can get. And you can do these things yourself.
Exactly.
But as he says, there's the training that goes into it, you know, all the preparation that goes into it, the thought, all that goes into it first. You know, safety third and all. Journey usually takes racers a month to complete. While Reeves is looking forward to hitting the water, he's hoping to set a record of 652 miles in 7 days. 4 weeks? Nah, I got one. So I'll just, you know, I'll see you at the finish line in a month. I'll circle back.
So what he was, he's going from, he's sleeping from 8 till midnight?
No, 8 in the morning till noon.
8 till noon. So
4 hours.
He's going to paddle all night long.
Yeah. Yep. From noon till 8 the next morning, he'll be paddling.
Wow.
Well, there's less traffic on the waterways then, too,
true,
right?
True.
So, whenever I set a record, even though records are made to be broken, I want to set a record that's going to last for a long time. I don't want somebody to come around this week, beat my record, and then I have to do it again.
Yeah. Where's those two old guys that were, they were doing the Mississippi.
Oh, great.
We talked
about
them like 2 years ago. And so one guy did it, and he was the oldest to do it.
Yeah.
And then the next guy's, oh, now I'm the oldest, and now I'm with you.
They just keep doing it and doing it and doing it and doing it. Yeah. Dale Saunders. Saunders.
Yeah. Graybeard.
Yeah. Graybeard. So it does mean something to me, obviously, but it's not the end all be all.
Cool.
And that's the way you got to do it. It's like, you know what? I got this goal in mind. I'm going to go attempt it. If I don't attempt it, I don't attempt it. If I do, I do.
Mm-hmm.
It's good. That's a good, way to look at things.
Interesting.
Yeah. It'd be cool if he does it.
Yeah.
But
tough. I don't know.
Let's just shave 3 weeks off that trip.
And to go from 12 noon until 8 a.m. the next morning, you're going to travel all night. You're going to have, I wonder if he has some sort of support system or he's doing it unsupported. Because when it comes to stuff like that, if you're traveling that much at night, like you're talking like headlamps and stuff like that, because you're going to have nav lights. He can't just go out there without any lighting. He's going to run over by a tugboat or something, right?
Technicality. Safety third, didn't you hear?
Yeah.
Well, he does say we.
Okay. Right. But he doesn't say who the we.
So it's got to be a support team.
Yeah. Hmm.
Right?
Interesting. Mm-hmm. I look forward to it. Did he say, when is he going to do it?
Didn't say.
He doesn't say.
Nope.
So was it this year?
Yeah. Sounds like it's soon.
Hmm.
I've been finding a lot of that lately. People are talking about these adventures they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And no one's saying when their start dates are.
Well, I suppose it depends on long-range forecast, weather.
Well, no, but somebody can say, we're planning June 12th,
mm-hmm.
give or take.
Yeah.
But no one's even doing that.
Yeah, they're just leaving
like some of them are going, yeah, we're doing it this summer.
It does make it hard to be held summer to a specific date. Summer is
June, July, August.
Yeah.
So.
But you only need 7 days.
Care to narrow it down. Yeah. Which 7 days? Yeah, there's a couple other ones I was looking at, and it's like, we're doing it this summer.
This summer is when? A long.
When? So we can, you know, you like to find out more about these things. Yeah. But anywho, okay, so we started over down in Mexico, and we've come across to this side of the country.
So
yep. Let's head north.
Let's head north
now. Small team of paddlers has set off this spring, traveling 1,200 kilometers by canoe and portage from Tadoussac, Quebec to James Bay. They'll be reviving an ancient route traced by fur traders and indigenous guides centuries ago.
So when you mentioned this to me, I thought, oh, I heard about this. Yeah, and so I thought it was the group of girls that were going.
Yeah, there's the four girls
from the
traveling
west up
yeah.
to James Bay.
Yeah,
but this is a group of guys who are going from the east in Quebec.
Yeah, because that's the main trail is everybody mm-hmm. heads from, was it Minnesota up?
Yeah,
right to Hudson's Bay. That's the big route everybody yeah, wants
yeah.
to do.
Yeah,
but no, this is something. This is from Quebec up. Uh-huh, a little yeah. spin on your day. We don't have big political statements in this expedition. We just want to meet people, says Bruno Forrest, an author, canoe guide, and event organizer, and cultural mediator who's leading the expedition. We think that the canoe is the way that First Nations and ourselves can meet on that ground. The Alamer du Nord team includes a core group of 8 individuals from different communities and with various skills. A fisher, a cook, a veteran, a journalist, and indigenous land guides. Other paddlers will join the group at various points along the way. Their journey... You're counting on your fingers.
He said 8. So fisher, cook, veteran, journalist, indigenous land guides. That's 5.
Guides. And other people joining along the way. 1 and a 2 and a 3 and a...
So there's a core group plus other people that are going to jump in and
out. Yeah. Their journey began last Saturday and they're aiming to reach Waskaganish, in northern Quebec Cree community by mid-August, making stops in several indigenous communities.
So that'll be in the lower James Bay area.
Yeah. For Forrest, simply traveling the route is not enough. He wants to deepen the connection to old knowledge. Reminiscent, I'm having issues with speaking today, of the fur traders. To achieve this, he collaborated with Lionel Tremblay and Alain Gallant of Les Canots Tremblay to construct traditional cedar canoes. So they're using the old traditional cedar canoes of days gone by to do this trip, which will be kind of cool to be able to do those. The time of wooden canoes has passed, but the artisans that built them, the youngest of them is 80 years old. The oldest is 95. So we're going to use traditional cedar canoes and let's get these guys that are between 80 and 95 to build them.
Are they going? Are they actually going to do that? Like they're getting they these did. Guys to?
They're done.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very.
Those are heavy.
They're doing it the traditional way.
And for the first large portion of the journey, it's got to be up.
Uphill?
I'm going to say uphill.
It's uphill all the way,
up river. So the first part of the journey is going to be upriver. That was the first time. I was like, wait, uphill's the wrong word.
I'm hitchhiking on this canoe trip. Because forget that garbage.
So first part of the journey is going to be upriver. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be tough. So there's going to be high water portions or heavy water portions where they'll have to portage mm-hmm. and drag these beasts of canoes.
Oh, no, they'll have to carry them. There's no dragon.
You know what I mean? It was dragging some figure of speech.
Well, they're not, I don't think it doesn't sound like they're, like big Voyager canoes.
No, but still, right? Like when you're comparing a modern canoe at 40 pounds to a cedar strip canvas, mm-hmm. then you're talking like 80 to 100 pounds. It's a...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. the time of wooden canoes has passed, but the artisans that built them, the youngest of them is 80, the oldest 95. So it's very old and precious knowledge.
Absolutely.
Says Forrest. It is, and to have, you know...
His name is Forrest?
Yeah. His last name.
Paddle, Forrest, paddle.
Yeah. Paddle, Forrest. Bruno Forrest. Canoes are heavier and more fragile, but they move silently on the water, which does not scare away fish. Hmm. Hence why they have a fisher guy with them. it is such a piece of art. There's something we can't quantify. With the wood, with the beauty of the canoe, of nature, and there is a poetry, and that, and I think that's a value in itself. George Diamond, who originally from Waskaganish and is part of the local elders council up there, appreciates the group's efforts to retrace the old fur trade route. For him, watching others take up the paddle offers an opportunity to reflect on the spirit of shared paths and shared pasts. The way I look at this canoe trip, it would be a reconciliation project, says Diamond. He plans to organize a welcome event for the brigade in Waskaganish. What are you Googling?
À la mer du Nord.
Okay. Diamond says the journey shines light on the cultural pride and legacy of canoe making in his region. We're very proud of our history as canoe makers of James Bay because that was the main means of transportation in the past. Our peoples used our rivers as highways. Waskaganish, it was home to the Rupert House Canoe Factory, a Cree-operated facility that thrived in the mid-20th century. This factory produced large wood and canvas freighter canoes. All these paddling routes our ancestors and voyagers took together. There are so many of them, and this happens to be just one of the main ones. They paddled all over Quebec, says Diamond. This route was something that our people had to learn to survive on during the fur trade. Yeah, you don't really... You think of the how hard that would have been with the big, you know, the big canoes and that. But even still, even with like two people to a smaller canoe with all the furs mm-hmm. and all that sort of stuff and supplies and stuff, that'd be brutal.
Well, so if you think about back in the day and today, what we consider hard and what they considered hard, I think we're different.
I think because we're wussies.
We are. We are now.
But, double portage.
But back in the day, this was a lifestyle. This is what they did. The fur traders, they traveled these routes. It was their job. It was their life, right? And obviously we've gotten soft with technology and time and like one of the things that I think they would really appreciate is some DEET. but think about the difficulty factor. Back in the day, this is just what they did, so they didn't really think about the difficulty. And of course, they're not posting about it on Instagram and stuff like that. They were just doing it. It was a way of life. Mm-hmm. And now we people nowadays drop in and cosplay it, I guess you could say. I'm not trying to make light of it. I am trying to be funny, but I'm not trying to make too much light of it because it is a tough journey that these guys are going to be embarking on.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at the webpage now, and like they left on the 31st of May.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of pictures on their website, so it's interesting. It's the application's closed. I wish I had heard about this sooner. They did a radio interview, and there's a lot of interesting stuff here.
Yeah, things are going to happen along the way.
So it is a tough journey in comparables for today's time to then, but again, we do get become wusses as technology.
I broke a nail!
Exactly. Exactly.
Anybody see my lipstick? Diamond also emphasized the often unrecognized labor and knowledge Indigenous peoples brought to the trade networks. A lot of Cree people who came down the river were guides. They guided the first fur traders, and the Cree did all the heavy lifting. To reach inland areas, the fur traders had to go through Rupert House, where the Cree men collected supplies like sugar and flour. They would then transport these goods to Namaska Post and Mistassini, something they did for a long time in the early 1900s. He says he looks forward to hearing about the expedition's group experiences this spring and summer. Now, when you're talking like bags of flour and stuff like
I
that,
know,
like
right?
It's not like a bag of Robin Hood flour.
Yeah.
You're talking these big white sacks of flour that they're hoofing up, not just one or two of them, right?
Like, yeah.
You got a whole bunch of it to take up, and it's not heavy, not light.
Yeah.
It's not an easy trip. This is going to be some hardship, but they seem to be ready. I hope that they will be successful. Diamond also hopes the exchange is mutual, that the paddlers will take back not only memories, but a deeper understanding of the land and its people. We should learn from each other. I'm not sure that these paddlers are going to learn quite a bit about our history as they paddle down, I'm sure that these paddlers are going to learn quite a bit about our history as they paddle down, adding that tea, bannock, and berry jam will await them when the brigade arrives in Wiskaganish. Train is very different from what it was 200 years ago, according to Forrest, and he anticipates that most challenging parts of the journey will be the waves of cold salt water from James Bay and winds strong enough to halt the group. Additionally, powerful upstream currents may force the team to portage instead. Since some portage trails no longer exist, the team will need to cut down trees along the way. And we've known a bunch of people in the last decade that of doing all these find the lost routes.
Yes.
Yep. And they say, oh yeah, here it is. And then all of a sudden the trail disappears and they have to find where that trail went.
Just trying to find the old Wastanagan routes and stuff north. And I've been on like at least three different trips where we're trying to find old routes and trying to, you know, bushwhack and figure out where it is and trying to push your canoe through a thicket of trees. It's like, I'm sure it's here somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I see an expedition as a choreography. When you are in the expedition, you just accomplish what was planned and deal with the things that were not programmed. The team will invite community members to a day of activities during their stopovers. Children and youth can try out canoes, test portage gear, and learn about the old fur trade routes. We always hope that people from different communities will come join us and share their stories. We bring what we have, but we want to learn from people there too, says Forrest. We will be able to learn all about the long journey that the Cree Nation has with the canoes, brigades, and nomadic travels. Forrest expects that it will be changing experience for the paddlers. It's just reconnecting with so much important things in nature and in the culture, he says.
Interesting. That's amazing.
It is. It's yeah, you know what? Like a hands-on experience from the way they used to do things. Like 100, 200 years ago.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's just this new hands-on experience, and it gives you a feel for what they had to I mean, it won't be a full 100% feel.
Exactly.
But
you're going to have freeze-dried an food idea of, and yeah. light meal packs. Your packs are much lighter. You're not carrying as much
think
stuff.
So, but yeah. You never know. We're just going to load this crap up with rocks just to make it feel
I'm gonna
for real.
I'm going
to
be genuine. I'm only going to wear wool.
Right? I've thought about doing stuff like that. I saw there was a group of paddlers, and they dressed up like they were from like the early 1900s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they had like the pants with the high socks and boots.
Yeah.
And they'd wear those little like Peaky Blinder type hats.
Okay.
And the vest suit. What's that suit vest that goes underneath with the buttons buttoned up and stuff yeah. like that. And the shirts, not like we wear today.
Yeah.
Right. So it looks like they were from like the 1900s sort of deal. And they just would have been in the early 2000s. They were doing these trips all geared out like that.
I remember talking about some guys who were doing, we did a couple yeah. things on them. Like
yeah.
this was we like talked about them a lot 6 years ago. We yeah. talked about them.
Yeah.
So with the all original gear, they were like doing, they were trying to be genuine and original with all the old canoes and the heavy gear.
Yeah. I would die of heat.
Mm-hmm.
Just the heat stroke, man. Like, no way. It'd be cool to do it. I've thought about doing something yeah. like that, but I'm just keep coming back to the, yeah, you're going to die. Because it's heavy clothing to wear.
Well, it's, and there's only so much you can go for nostalgia, right? Like
I would just be laying down in every lake I came across at the end of a portage. Like the actual paddling part yeah. in that gear wouldn't be an issue.
Yeah.
I guess maybe in the rain because it would hold in all that water, right?
Oh, it would, yeah.
But portaging in all of that, hot, buggy.
Yeah.
Like, no. I'd be naked halfway down the portage. Forget this.
I can't wear this.
Where's Sean? Oh, he's wearing nothing but a leaf. He's full Adam and Eve coming down the trail right now. But he is portaging the canoe.
Yeah. Original portager.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got the canoe, he's got a backpack and a leaf. He's wearing a fern.
It's very traumatizing for everybody but him.
Yeah. Don't look! Trust me, you don't want to lie. Oh, let him go first and give him lots of lead time. Well, hopefully this is another thing that they get a good sense of what they were trying to experience on this trip, and they make it up there. And another cool trip for the season.
Yeah, I find these kind of trips and these journeys that people are doing, I find them fascinating. And I wonder how long, what was the lead time? When did they first come up with the idea? Was this something that they started thinking about like years ago? Or is it this just something they...
It'd be a couple years at least to get all this stuff
ready. It takes a while
to
plan on this. Well, they had to
get the canoes
built and stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's fascinating. And I want to... I found their website now, so I'm going to be following these guys. So they're on Instagram and so on, so it's easy to follow them that way. And they're going to be in a lot of communities for the most part, so they'll have connectivity, so you'll be able to see what's going on. But it's, yeah, it's very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Be nice to do that trip. Be nice to have the time to do that trip.
I know. That's the part.
It's too many trips that we want to do.
That's the hard part.
That's the drawback to doing
like,
this
how
podcast.
How do you find time?
Yeah. All right. We're heading south again.
Heading south, and we're going very modern.
We're going to Vermont. Let's take a little trip south the border to Vermont, shall we?
Mexico, all BC, right. Tennessee, now Quebec, and now
Quebec,
Vermont.
James Bay, and now down to Vermont. Camping is about escaping daily life and hearing the sounds of birds, not motorboats. How many times have you been on a lake and all you hear over the hills?
Yeah, I know.
Right?
Yeah.
Now a new, less noisy way to travel has hit the water at a Vermont state park. Green River Reservoir State Park has a gas-powered boat for patrol and maintenance, but it wasn't exactly popular at the paddle-only park, so staff decided to ditch their engine for something more serene. There were some people who complained about, hey, that's not right. It's supposed to be quiet order.
So, well, it's a non-motorboat
park.
Lake and not right. a motor park. But the rangers and park staff needed to get around to do their rounds.
Right.
So they used the gas.
Yeah. So Ross Bryant of Green River Reservoir State Park has said, things here are already so quiet, even just that little bit of noise was quite disruptive. It echoed and reverberated. It was noticeable detraction from the peace and quiet. The reservoir is more tranquil now thanks to a new ride dubbed an electric canoe. It's the only one of its kind being used at a state park in Vermont. Staffers say it's a game changer for peaceful parks like theirs. The canoe uses a torpedo. So it's like torpedo,
but with a Q
and two E's. Electric outboard motor and battery system donated by the Friends of Green River Reservoir. Staffers charge batteries via solar panels, then maneuver the reservoir with just a gentle purr.
It's like a trolling motor.
It is. It's but it's faster than a trolling motor.
Yeah.
We notice it's a lot quieter, and we can still get our job done with it, says Bryant. We so quiet that nesting loons may just mosey up. Staff say that's really what the canoe is all about, conserving the quiet so campers and wildlife can coexist more cleanly. Also allows us not only to operate with quiet and peace and serenity in mind, it also has a very small ecological footprint. I think this is just a very unique place, and I think it would be protected and kept in this wilderness-like state. Department of Forests, Parks and Recreation says it hopes to eventually replace boats at other parks with similar electric systems. Now, I was looking at one of these, and they're like over $2,000.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there is a price tag that comes with this kind of stuff. But, I mean, that's everything, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like going from a gas car to an electric car.
Yeah. You're
paying a bit more than... Mm-hmm. Than you would.
And it's one and done. So.
But, yeah, so yeah, so you can get these guys out there and, you know, boogie around the lake doing what they need to do, campsite to campsite to campsite, yeah. cleaning up and doing repairs and stuff like that, or getting out to portages to clean them, and they're not having a paddle. They can actually do their job, get where they need to be, and quickly, and not disturb everybody in the process. So
Yeah.
So if you're down in Vermont, State Park there, keep an eye out for the torpedo.
Keep an eye out, not an ear.
That's right, because you're not going to see it with your ears.
Well, you're not going to hear it. This is my point.
I can see. I can smell pictures, buddy. and the last item I've got here.
This is the fun stuff.
This is the good stuff. A mysterious figure was captured roaming the woods in Colorado, sparking theories that the elusive Bigfoot has finally been found. A whitewater rafting crew with the Colorado River Expedition was traveling down the Upper Colorado River May 24th when they pulled ashore for a break. Logan Kirk, the lead guide, says he and about 12 others had stopped for lunch when they spotted the creature roughly 500 yards away. Someone yelled out they saw a bear, so we started looking at it, and that's when we realized it was something else. It wasn't a bear. It was standing up there on the hillside, he said. It was definitely bipedal, which really stood out to us.
Yeah, it would.
There is a video. There's always a video.
Not always. You're glad when there's a video.
There's a video, which has been viewed millions of times, shows a large furry figure walking through dense pines. It stops in between two trees, appears to stare directly at the camera, and then vanishes in the woods. While many commenters are thrilled at the idea that Bigfoot may have been found, others believe it was either a person in a suit or a bear walking on two legs. It doesn't look like a bear.
No,
but it sure looks like
bear.
Somebody in a suit.
Yes. So, but it's out in the middle of nowhere. So what dude is going to wander out into the forest?
But he was on that side of the river. And why did they stop at that particular time?
Was it set up? Was it a plan?
When he happened to be there. Dun, dun, dun.
I know.
The truth is out there. Regardless, Kirk is planning a return expedition to the same spot as the sighting. We're going to go up to see if we can find any evidence of what was going on up there, whether that's footprints or something else. Who knows? It's so hard in the rocks to actually get anything like that, but we want to see if there's anything there. Others asked, why is it always the same type of blurry, faraway footage of Bigfoot?
It wasn't that blurry. I thought it was quite clear.
That blurry, but it's still far away. I mean, it's not like they found him like right next to them.
Yeah, there, he wasn't you like know? In their campsite.
If he was 15 feet away, probably still would have been blurry. But
mm-hmm.
while the sighting is likely a person in a suit or a bear, I don't think it's a bear. Colorado has had more than 100 reports of the human-like creature since March of this year.
That's a lot.
So I'm thinking some hermit just hasn't shaved since last year and needs a full-on body shave. Day at the spa. We're still trying to figure it out, said Kurt. We've gone through the footage and zoomed in on the images, whatever it is, whether Bigfoot or some other creature. Stories of large, hairy, human-like beings go back centuries to ancient indigenous cultures across North America. First widely publicized report of Bigfoot in modern times came in 1958, when journalist Andrew Genzoli of Humboldt Times in California published a letter from a reader describing massive, mysterious footprints found near a logging site in Bluff Creek. Letters sparked widespread interest and follow-up articles, some playful referring to the creature as Bigfoot, helped launch the legend into the public imagination. Most famous and still debated piece of Bigfoot evidence, in quotes, came in 1967 when Bob Gimlin and Roger Patterson filmed a now epic, or now iconic clip of a large furry figure striding through the woods at Bluff Creek. Known as the Patterson-Gimlin film, footage was shot during the duo's expedition to find the elusive beast. Both men were on horseback when they rounded a bend and spotted a towering, ape-like creature walking along the riverbed. Its head and torso were sloped forward, back hunched, massive thighs flexing with each step, and long arms swinging at its sides. Patterson's horse reared up in a panic. He jumped off, grabbed his camera, and scrambled across the ground, waving the device in one hand and desperately trying to keep the creature in frame. The shot steadied just long enough to capture the moment. The creature turned to look over its right shoulder before it disappeared into the trees. Years later, Bob Aeronimus, a retired Pepsi bottler from Yakima, claimed he was the one in the costume that used to stage the video. But Gimlin, who is still alive, has always denied that story, insisting that what he and Patterson saw that day was not a man in a suit, but Bigfoot. If you want to see the video, just Google Logan Kirk Bigfoot, and there'll be a lot of
options. Whole bunch of people. Yeah.
So they're in this rafting trip.
Yeah.
They pull over to have lunch. On the far side of the river and way up a hill, they see something walking. And it's Bigfoot.
Yeah.
It's not a bear. There's no way that's a bear.
No, definitely.
Especially
not
on
a bear.
A slope like that. Yeah, a bear on 2 feet on a slope like that.
Bears aren't going to do that.
No.
It turns, it pierced between two couple trees, and it purposely turns its back on the camera and walks into the deeper brush.
Yeah. But it's staring right at them like,
hey,
what are you guys doing over there, man? Hey, I can see it. Oh, see ya. You got a camera. I'm outie.
Yeah.
And blah, 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 off he goes.
So I think both of us are in agreement of what it was.
Yes.
It's
Bigfoot.
It's a Wookiee.
It's a Wookiee.
It's a Wookiee.
2 out of 2 Paddling Adventures Radio hosts believe it was a Wookiee from Star Wars.
So it was down taking plant samples and soil samples. His ship was somewhere cloaked. And
over the ridge.
Exactly.
And he left the other Wookiees to go do his business in the trees, and just as he stood up from doing his business, whoa, there's all these people watching me doing my Wookiness.
Like, I don't know what it is, but it's who knows what it could be.
Now, we've been watching this Wookiee, Bigfoot vlog Instagram.
This guy does AI-generated videos of Bigfoot.
Yep. And all comedy stuff, right?
Yeah.
And one of the things is, okay, so somebody sent me a letter here. Hey, was that you in that video doing? And,
yeah, it was me.
And they actually did a clip Logan Kirk video.
Yeah.
And they showed that. And he goes, yeah, that was me. I was just looking for a good fishing spot. So this just goes to show, when you're out on a rafting trip through Colorado,
Keep your eyes open
because things are out there.
Yeah.
You never know what you're going to see.
You might pop around the corner on the river and
see a Wookiee.
Yeah, if you're focused on paddling in the water, don't focus on your paddling. Don't focus on the water. Don't watch out for rocks. Look for Bigfoot.
Look for Bigfoot because he's out there.
Yeah. The truth is out there.
Yes.
That's awesome. Like, I I looked at the video. It looks like Bigfoot.
It's a dude in a suit.
No.
It's a Wookiee suit. Wait a minute. Has anybody seen George Lucas lately?
He's doing some projects.
He was going camping.
He's doing a project.
Hilarious. You got anything else?
I don't.
Why not?
How do you top that?
Yeah. A rescued dog and Bigfoot.
Yeah, exactly. Wookiee.
Bear standing on two feet dancing. Alrighty.
I think one of the concerns for me now would be, to be honest, there's going to be a load of people tromping through the bush in that area.
Mm-hmm.
So it's unfortunate. A lot of people are going to be curious. A lot of people are going to be interested. But what it means is you're going to see a lot of people getting out there. Some people getting injured. There's a lot of people doing a lot of damage in the backcountry. And so, I don't know. Be responsible. Treat the backcountry and the forest with responsibility and respect.
You know, if somebody went to and picked up a gun and shot it, questions would be answered right there.
Can you imagine?
So, good news. We now know Bigfoot is real. Bad news, because some guy in a rat pegged him.
He's
500
shot.
Meters.
Wait, what even pegged him? So, like, you don't shoot Bigfoot.
Don't shoot Bigfoot. Do not take this.
Do not shoot Bigfoot.
Yes.
Chances are
it's a dude in a suit.
Dude in a suit, and you're going to be charged with murder, or you're going to kill an alien and we're going to be invaded.
Right?
Anyway.
Do you, this is how you get Jedi down here, people. Shoot the Wookiee.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Well, if you want to find out more about us,
or if you don't want to find out more about
us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can download or stream our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or you can just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com. And you can stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.